Well, we're going to begin this new year talking about women. You know, I like talking about women. I seem to be talking about women a lot, but you know, it's hard to go through the book of Judges without talking about women. Or it's hard to go through the Bible, for that matter, talking about women, because the Bible has so much about women in it, in addition to men. And so we're going to begin this new year again. It's something I like to do anyway, is talk about women, because I like women. But what I'm going to talk to you about this morning is something called the woman warrior. Now, the woman warrior, the theme of the woman who goes to war, the warrior woman, that is actually, it's always been there throughout history and literature. Go back to Herodotus, and Herodotus would recount the legend of the Amazons, right? The women, the whole nation, women warriors, and their encounter with the Greek in his writings. There was Joan of Arc, right? The great deliverer of France. There's the moment when Father Christmas gives Susan in the Chronicles of Narnia the bow and arrow to go out and do war. And our meditation this morning from The Lord of the Rings highlighted the real turning point in the Battle of Gondor. Recall the Battle of Gondor, it hinged on the confrontation between Eowyn, who's in disguise as a soldier, and the Nazgul. Right, and there's this line that just brings tears to the eyes, where the Nazgul is basically, it's all hope is lost, and Eowyn is standing between him and her father, who lies on the battlefield, and the Nazgul is about to pounce, and she says, "I'm going to hinder you from doing this," and he says, "You fool!" He laughs and says, "No man alive, no man living can hinder me." And her voice rings out like steel. "No living man am I." Right? So there's always been this warrior woman theme in the scriptures. I mean, in the culture and in history. But what's unusual today is that before today, the woman warrior has always been represented as an unusual occurrence. Okay, Eowyn struggles with her father and with Aragorn for going into battle. She fumes that she can't be who she really is, because it's a men's world to go to war, and she's not able to go to battle. And that was kind of a statement of, this is an unusual thing, right? And that's always been the case. The kind of woman warrior has been looked at as a sort of aberration, right? These days, in our day, in our place, in our time, The theme of the woman warrior is omnipresent. I don't know, have you noticed? But it is multiplied again and again throughout the various media offerings ad infinitum. From Broadway to TV shows, we have the woman warrior, even to, say, a TV show like Once Upon a Time, right? You turn on that TV show, current TV show, and it's, what is it about? It's about the women out there doing it. And, you know, it's the message is the chicks can do it without the guys around, right? They can take up the swords and be the warrior. Painting with this broad brushstroke, in the past, women have been kind of representatives of softness and support. And women who didn't fit into that category were there fuming and protesting and saying, "No, this is not..." Categorizing women this way is not allowing me to be who I am. But there was a tide that changed at some point, you know, when former Secretary of State Clinton, whom actually we should pray for, having a hard time, we should pray for her. But I remember her comment about baking cookies. I don't know how many of you remember it, but gosh, it's about 20 years ago now, I think, where she said she chose her career over staying home and baking cookies. And she had to apologize for that statement. But the fact that she felt comfortable making it in public showed you that the tide was turning, right? And it has turned to the point today where You know, if you now it is the women who do not fit into the women warrior armor who have to protest, who have to say, wait a second, you know, I'm not getting to be who I am. So the tables have kind of turned. All right, well, I am not going to solve this problem for you this morning. We are not going to do that. But I wanted to bring it up because I wanted to show you that the theme of the woman warrior has its origin in the Bible. The woman warrior actually originates in the Bible. And it says something to us, whether we are women or men, about our salvation. So let us take a look. We heard Renee read two scriptures this morning, one from Judges 5, the other from Luke chapter 1. And I put these together this morning because there's something the same in these two passages. There are only two women in the whole Bible who are called most blessed among all women. There are only two women who are called blessed among women. And they are on opposite sides of history, interestingly. Only two. And you know, this is unrestrained praise. You know, sometimes we compliment each other and say, you're pretty good and you got this and you've got these skills. But this is, you're the top, right? You are most blessed among all women. You know, nobody does it better. Remember that song, Nobody Does It Better? That unrestrained praise, only that was, I guess, about James Bond. Imagine saying that to someone. Nobody does it better. You are most blessed among all women. Only two women get that kind of praise in the Bible. And by the way, each time in these cases that it's spoken by another woman about that woman. So, you know, it's one thing to get praise from the opposite gender and say, you're so great, you know, you got it so good. But we have actually trouble understanding each other's blessings across the gender. So it's quite another thing to have the same gender, someone from the same gender say, you're the top. This effuse praise. You've got it so good. You're the greatest. So it's kind of like saying a woman among women is what you have. All right, why? Why are these two women given this effuse praise? And I want to get there by looking at maybe what joins them together. How can we tell? We can look at what's similar about them. When we look at these two women, there is very little that seems to be similar about them. We need to listen to the women who are describing them. The first woman, the second passage who's talking is Elizabeth. And Elizabeth, you know, this young girl comes to her and she basically bows down. This is the older woman bowing down to this essentially a girl with this praise and just lifting her up. But we should notice verse 41 of Luke chapter 1 that Elizabeth's words are authoritative. She's filled with the Holy Spirit and then she says this thing. So this is coming not only from Elizabeth, it's coming from the divine impulse here. And likewise, also in Judges 5, the woman speaking is Deborah. The Judges 5 is the Song of Deborah, this ancient text. And Deborah is speaking about this woman, and she is speaking as a prophetess, which she was. So, again, we have the authoritative word here. We should listen to what they say. And they say these two things about these two women. Who are the two women? They are Mary, mother of Jesus, and Yael, slayer of Sisera, from Judges 5. What is it that unites them together? Well, if you try to look at it at the face of it, there isn't too much. One is married, the other is not. They both have men in their lives, but one has a man in his life who is a strong believer. Another has a man in her life who is not a believer at all. One delivers the people of God by staying at home. The other by going on a journey with her betrothed. One is taking a life. the other is giving a life. So, what is it that brings them together? What is it that unites these women? Well, if you look at it closely, friends, you'll see that both of these women needed great strength to do what was required by God of them. Both of them were brave beyond normal bravery. Both had a faith surpassing many. Both were instrumental in bringing about the salvation for the people of God. And in both cases, it had to be a woman who did it. It had to be a woman who brought about that deliverance. And for both of these women, it was a unique place of women in their activities that was important. In Yael's case, it was the location of the tents that she occupied and her availability that brought Sisera into her power. We've looked at that story a number of times now. In Mary's case, it was Mary's womb that was needed as the first home of Jesus the Christ. But especially this is what I want to, draws my attention, is that both of these women needed to face violence and blood. One of them in killing, the other one in childbirth. Because, friends, make no mistake about it, you know, despite medical advances and despite all the things that we can try to do, childbirth is still a bloody affair. I mean, it is just a thing of blood. It involves bloodshed. Don't we know that? In fact, we have heroes here in the Village Church who recently kind of went through this battle, trauma of childbirth. And maybe we can acknowledge them and give them a hand. One of them seems to be here this morning, and that's Sarah Walker. The other is not Natalie Bush, but her husband is here. Let's give them a hand for facing this bravely. Well done. Well done. Well done. But both of them, you see, that means both of these women had to face some violence in their lives. And both of them rose to the occasion and chose to do it. You see, what unites these two women, and we can see as we look at these passages, is that they both understood that they were in a war. Both of these women had a military mindset about them. Is that true? Let me show you how that's true. The first one is kind of obvious. It's kind of obvious with Yael, right? Verse 23, cursed is Meraz, says Deborah by the angel of the Lord. Cursed Meraz. Sorry, that's a little dark there. Still not getting it. And why is Meraz cursed? Because they didn't come to battle. They didn't come. Whereas, and what's happening is Deborah is contrasting Yael. Yael, however, is blessed. Why? Because she met the battle when it came to her. She entered into the fight when it comes to her tent door. And then, verse 26, obviously she takes in her hand the tent peg and the mallet, and boom, 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 there she goes. Yael's obviously praised here as a woman who needed to be a warrior in that moment. Actually, physically a warrior. But this is also true, in a way, of Mary. Now, it might be hard for us to see this because usually when we think of Mother Mary, right, we think of her as striking this pose. Yeah, there's a halo around her head, and that's the characterization we have of Mary. But, you know, when you actually look at her words, there's more to this portrait of piety that we have in our heads to her. She has certainly great faith, right? In verse 48, you can see Mary's great faith. All generations will call me blessed. She really believed what the angel says. She was carrying the Lord as well. But there's more to it. You know, if you look at Mary's imagery, verse 49, for example, she talks about he who is mighty in this situation. He who is mighty. And, you know, we tend to spiritualize that and say, well, God is mighty because, you know, he got me that job that I really needed. But actually, when she's saying that, she's talking Trepper Longman, a scholar, points out, she's actually using military imagery here. She's talking about God who is powerful in battle, God who has military strength. Verse 51, he shows the strength of his arm. Again, military terms. Verse 52, he's put down the mighty from their thrones. It's martial language that she's using. And, you know, some have pointed out that actually a number of elements from Mary's song here are taken from an earlier song in the scripture, the song of Hannah, the mother of Samuel, who also experienced a miraculous birth. And Hannah gives the same kind of imagery. Hannah even more explicitly, she says, "The adversaries of the Lord shall be broken to pieces. Against them he will thunder in heaven." A fighting, a battle, a martial role that this woman is engaged in. And Mary knows it. She knows it. She knows that there is evil that needs to be crushed. A battle against evil is going on. And this is what really unites these two women. They both chose to be involved in it. They both chose to be involved in the battle that was there. Now let me just pause for a moment here and address those of us who might be here having trouble with the whole military thing. I mean, you might be here and a little bit offended, especially maybe the first passage reading about how Yael is praised and how Deborah is just exulting in this praise. You know, and you look at these things and verse 26, she split and she struck his head through the temple. You know, Deborah's really enjoying what Yael has done, you know, and he sunk down dead at her feet, and he was really dead, and he just sank there. He just keeps talking about that, you know. He lay still. He was really dead, really dead. So obviously, you know, Deborah is exalting this, and you might find this offensive. You might say, this is what bothers me about the Bible. It's going on about war and talking about these battles as if it's something good. You know, how can it do that? And you might, you know, take offense at that. But I want you to realize something, friends, that you may feel that way because we have never lived under the continual marauding invaders of tyranny as they did. So we might consider this barbaric, but we realize that we are speaking that from a place of comfort. We don't know what it's like to live under Jabin, the king of Canaan, who, you know, what it's like to have everything that you've ever worked for taken from you at any moment. Anything that you build up that you've owned, just pillaged regularly by bands that came through. And, you know, raped women as they pleased, took whatever they wanted. Just imagine that as a regular feature of your life. We've never had that. So we might be coming from a little bit of a place of self-righteousness and looking at this and saying, oh, this is so barbaric. But imagine if that was your situation. You had people who depended on you. You couldn't be sure you were going to feed them. You know, you take someone, Lynn, like you, imagine being in a situation where everything you had could be taken from you. You might be looking at your son and he might not be eating, you know. He might not be able to eat next year, you know. That is where this exaltation comes from. Okay, we might not relish the victory, but that's because we have not been under the oppression that these people were experiencing. But that is what was in store for Israelites if Sisera won the war, or even if he escaped to raise another army. That is what they had to look forward to. That is why they are exalting this and rightly attributing this as a victory of the Lord. And this, friends, as we begin a new year, is probably a reason to thank God. It's probably a reason for thankfulness in our hearts, a deep thankfulness that we live in a time and a place of prevailing peace, highly unusual in history and not likely to last. You know, you realize you are in a little pocket here for which you should thank God. Relative peace here. But we should also realize that it colors our view of God's very real deliverance that he brings from tyranny. And in this case, by the blow of this woman's tent mallet. Do you know, there's only one other character in the whole whole of Judges 5 in Deborah's song. There's only one other character that's called blessed. Like, one other character is blessed. Do you know who that is? It is God himself. God himself and Yael are called blessed. Both of them are blessed. Both of them are indeed pictured as the head-smashing victorious ones. And Mary, too, is being this way. What Mary's song shows us is that she realizes she's involved in something much bigger than herself. And she's about to deal a crushing blow to evil. It is God on the warpath is what's going on, even inside of her womb. These two women are the most blessed because they are both warriors. They both have a martial mindset. So they can be strong in their faith, even to the point of violence. Interesting picture of womanhood, huh? That we got. All right, so let me just say this. Am I saying that we should therefore take up arms? Am I rallying the cry? Now is the time. Let's bear arms to bring in the kingdom of heaven. No. We don't promote the violent entrance of the kingdom of heaven anymore because Jesus said that the kingdom is no longer coming that way as it came in the days of Yael or even in the days of Mary before his ministry, before he came on the scene and said it's not going to be about a geopolitical entity anymore. It's going to be something different. No, this is new. So we should not be this is not a call to take up arms. But we should accept that these women are comfortable understanding the warrior nature of God. And what God requires of them, even them, is battle. For evil still lives on. Do you not know this? There is still evil to be crushed in this world. There is still evil to be fought against in this world. And you need to be brave as women. You need to have faith that allows you to face these things, to face evil in the face and stare it down. Let me give you some examples here to try to picture this and visualize this. What does this mean for us, those of us who are women today? And, you know, a great illustration for me comes from this dissertation that I'm doing. And I want to thank, as the year begins again, I want to thank the Village Church for your support in helping me do this this doctoral work. And as you know, as part of this dissertation, I've been talking to men, I'm talking to husbands and how their wives act towards them and how what that does to them. And these are Christian couples that I'm talking to, so there's talk about submitting and deferral and the wives allowing the husband to lead, those kinds of things. And when they talk about that, what I've noticed about these husbands is that most of them, when they talk about, you know, this aspect of their marriage of decision making and when the wives are doing this for them, what they always seem to bring up or many times seem to bring up without prompting is how this is not weakness in their wives, that this is actually a show of strength. It's not weakness. And some of them are very adamant about this, that when they look at their wives being able to defer to them at times and submit, you know, they get, there's this one guy who is a very mild-mannered guy who's just, you know, allows his, kind of the way Ken was describing this, just allowing things to go on, doesn't want to cause any waves, very mild mannered. He's the kind of guy you look at and you say, well, does this guy ever get angry? And in this interview came out that there's one time when he gets really angry, when his wife is characterized by other people as a doormat for taking the role that she does, for submitting it and taking this role in the marriage that she does. And sometimes when friends or relatives who don't understand and characterize her as not being able to stand up for herself and being a doormat, he gets mad at her. And he gets mad, he says, because it is such a show of strength in her. When his wife is that way, it really comes from a place of strength. So he gets mad at people, actually, when they try to characterize it differently. Another guy, as I say, they bring this up without prompting. Obviously, responding to some imaginary voice in the room when we were talking, he put it this way, and I quote, "She," talking about his wife, "she sees the feminine as strong. It's not weak. And she sees that she has a really powerful role to play in what kind of environment she creates for me to live in. My wife is by no means a milquetoast, by any stretch. After all, she's from New Jersey." Unquote. So you see, there's a strength to this. Women's strength, at least in relationships, might come out a little differently than we expect. But the point is that here, that the women of God are strong, no less than men. You know, and you can't use submission as in the church context or in the family context as a mask for weakness, which sometimes it is. It's not an excuse to be weak. You can't do that. The women of God need to be strong. They can't be milquetoast, as my friend said. They need to come from New Jersey in themselves, whatever that means. Why? Because it takes this military mindset to crush evil. You have to stand against evil. It takes a martial mindset. And you cannot live successfully as a Christian, woman or man, without realizing you're in a battle. So that's kind of one way where women personally can rise to the battle. Publicly as well. You know, when I think of kind of public examples of this, I think of Baroness Caroline Cox, who serves in the British House of Lords. And she's a legislator there in the House of Lords. And Caroline Cox focuses the House's attention whenever she can on how she's a believer, she's a Christian believer, and she focuses on religious persecution around the world and how people of all faiths, especially Christians, are persecuted for their faith around the world. What is Cox doing? She is pulling down strongholds in what she does. Or I think of the dancer, Janine Lacamont, is this dancer, a woman who's danced all her life. And today she heads a nonprofit youth development organization called Children of Light Dancers. She choreographs dances to show how the plight, really, of terrorized children in northern Uganda. She developed a special dance, in fact, called Seek Justice, which she performs and has children perform to raise funds for an international justice mission for this work. What is Janine doing? She's realizing she's in a battle. She's taking what she has publicly, crushing evil as she can. These are different examples that come to my mind and things that I've read. What about you? You know, you may not fit into the warrior woman armor, or you may. You know, but you don't need to be a woman warrior, so to speak, but you do need to be strong. You do need faith to trust God for the things that He has in your life. You need to do battle against evil. And, you know, to get yourself ready for this, you don't need the girl with the dragon tattoo, because you have the Bible. And this has always been a part of God's plan for women. Always. From the very beginning, God promised the very first woman we saw, Eve, He promised her that she would crush evil. Through her womb, through her offspring, through the fruit of her womb, the skull of the serpent would be crushed. That was partly fulfilled through Seth, her son. It was also then fulfilled more by Jael, who crushed the skull of evil in her tent and delivered the people of God from oppression. And just so, it was finally fulfilled in Mary, whose son, Jesus Christ, crushed the skull of evil through his life, his death, his resurrection. And it's a crushing of evil through his mercy. See verse 50. It talks about the way that he's crushing evil through his mercy on those who fear him. And we are now involved in Jesus Christ's not yet completed work. We are raised up as women and as men to be continuing that crushing the work of evil by mercy. And that's important for us to realize as we close out our celebration here of Christmas and finally turn our attention away to other things. Let's remember that as we come to our table now, women and men, let us come to celebrate the crushing of the skull of evil. Amen.